Podcasting from Alexandria, Virginia, just a few miles from Washington, D.C., where we all hope doing what is right the first time is everyone's top priority. This is Software Quality Today, presented by TX3 Services, where we empower life science companies to digitally transform their software testing. This is a podcast for industry professionals about the trends and challenges of software quality testing, computerized system validation, and the people who are leading the way. We'll be providing you with interviews from special guests as well as news from thought leaders at leading life sciences organizations and vendors alike. And now, here's your host, CSV expert and VP of Strategic Solutions at TX3 Services, Dori Gonzalez Acevedo.
Welcome to another episode of Software Quality Today, presented by TX3 Services. I'm your host, Dori Gonzalez Acevedo. Today, I'll be interviewing my friend and colleague, Jason Teffenhart, CEO and co-founder of TX3 Services. With over 20 years of life science experience, Jason's innovative approach to software development and computer systems validation life cycles has helped transform the CSV industry. Jason and I met 20 years ago when we were just starting our careers as chemists. I was a process chemist developing active pharmaceutical ingredients from bench to manufacturing floor, and he was an analytical chemist testing them for purity and stability. 21 CFR Part 11 had just been published, and Johnson Matthey, as a small manufacturing company, was all hands on deck to figure out what and how to support these new regulations for FDA pre-approval inspections. From here, Jason moved on to more IT CSV-related roles within Wyeth and SimQuest. He jumped into quality roles as quality system manager and director of quality management at Research Pharmaceutical Services, which eventually led him to Genlogix, where he met his future TX3 co-founder, Eric DeBuren. Jason's entrepreneurial side excelled at Genlogix as life science practice vice president. This is where eApprove, the first generation e-signature solution for Quality Center, was created. And from there, the journey over the past 15 years has evolved to best practices and solutions in software testing into what it is today, TX3's Vera, validated electronic record approval solution. TX3 Services' growth and expansion over the past 6 years is testament to Jason's passion to be a leading strategic advisor and partner with our customers, where Vera is now adopted in over 40 companies worldwide. As always, enjoy my conversation today with Jason Teffenhart. Welcome. Thank you for taking some time with me this morning. I'm interviewing Jason Teffenhart, CEO and co-founder of TX3 Services. We've actually known each other for quite some time, over 20 years. But we'd love for you to share your story and how TX3 came to be.
Sure. So I've been working in the pharmaceutical industry since pretty much I got out of college. I was an environmental technician. Right out of college, I have an environmental science degree, actually. That's where I first entered into working in the labs. So I'm giving a little background because this all relates into how I eventually got to TX3. So I had no intention at all, you know, working as a chemist in a pharmaceutical lab or anything of that nature. In fact, when I got my degree in environmental science, I was like, oh, maybe I'll go to environmental law. And I took my LSATs and everything. But along the journey, I ended up getting pulled into the labs because they needed some extra help at a small company called Immunomedics, which just got purchased by a big pharma recently. I think it might have been Gilead. But nevertheless, so I ended up getting into the science side of things, which I was always a very subpar, mediocre student from a chemistry standpoint when I took those classes in college. And I got by. But it also was one of those things where it didn't really interest me as much. So not that I wasn't interested in it, but it like had like partially, you know, kind of attracted my interest. So, but being in the labs, I ended up working with a lot of really bright folks. And then I felt like I needed to prove myself. So, you know, worked in the labs at Immunomedics and moved over to J&J McNeil, actually. That was my first company. I worked with from a big pharma perspective. And I ended up getting, you know, pretty well acclimated in the labs. And I was pretty good at running a lot of these experiments and testing. A lot of it was testing raw materials and finished products. And as I progressed in my career, and this is like late 90s, early 2000s, I started picking up on the computer systems that ran all the instrumentation in the labs and collected the data and calculated our results and whatnot. So I ended up shifting it you know, early on in my career over to, I was like the guru expert on like the LIMS systems and all the data acquisition systems in the lab. So I knew how to run the software really well, you know? So at that point, I ended up leaving and going to Wyeth for a little while on the IT side. That lasted for a couple years, and that worked out pretty well, but I still wasn't a pure IT professional. So I ended up shifting back into labs a bit, and that's where I met Dory at Johnson Matthey. We were working active pharmaceutical ingredients. And there I started working in the labs again, and again, started shifting more towards the technology side of things. And from that point, I went into consulting, and everything there. And I'll say is around 2003, I was working back at Wyeth again as a consultant, actually. I was working there as a consultant, and we were doing a consent decree project. I met Eric Tiburin, I think it was 2002 or 2003. And he was with another company at the time, Genelogics, and he was placing a lot of his folks at Wyeth. I was running a testing team there, and that's where we first met. At the time, he and one of the owners tried to recruit me, but I was leaving to go join a company called RPS, a clinical research organization, a CRO, to be head of their quality. So that was like 2002, 2003. So our paths kind of crossed but diverged. Fast forward a couple years later, Eric came calling. They needed some help at Genelogics. They were building life sciences practice, and I jumped ship. So that was 2005. So from that point forward, Eric and I started working together. We just built an immediate rapport. And at Genelogics, our main goal and focus was let's automate the computer system validation lifecycle. So this is back in early 2005 or so, when a lot of companies were adopting SAP, big ERP systems like SAP, and they needed testing tools to manage the actual testing process. So we were looking at how do we help automate part of that process? How can we help improve what they're doing, help unify and standardize? Because now they were using testing resources offshore, and they had quality folks and business folks throughout the world, really, because these companies were all global, and they needed some type of hub, central repository, and workflow to manage this. And that's where we started working with Quality Center, which was an old Mercury and an HP software. And then Howard Chase is with us today too. Worked with him for a while. Him and I basically sat side by side and started developing the first, you know, e-signature solution for Quality Center. And there's a little more background on that. The first actual e-sig add-in came from one of the founders at Genelogics, and he just did a quick down and dirty add-in for Bayer. And then Howard and I took it from there and started building it out. And then we added other folks onto our team as we went. There's lots of them. I won't go through all of them. And from that point, we started working forward. And then, you know, after 10 years working at, or I guess it was seven, eight years, working at Genelogics, Eric and I built up a pretty nice life sciences practice. And a lot of it was, actually all of it came down to, we had just a great team. So we led the way, but we had great people and the team that supported us. The owners of Genelogics supported us. When we got purchased with Avnet, we were a little bit skeptical how that would work out, going from a 20-something million-dollar company into a $26 billion company. In the first year or so, we did very well. We actually grew the business. And after year one, though, there seemed to be some infighting amongst a lot of the small company CEOs. And Eric and I decided to cut a deal and spin back off. And that's when we started TX3. And we also felt at Avnet, we were losing our way, which was our vision was really to automate the computer system validation process, continue to help improve software quality and testing within pharma. I mean, it was really that simple. And a lot of Eric and I's success, along with our whole team, was the interaction with our customers, always being there for our customers and meeting their needs. So we felt at Avnet, we were getting pulled away from, you know, the value of how we like to run our operation at the time of our life sciences practice, and spun off and said, you know what, we're going to continue where we left off with TX3. So that was 6 years ago. We started TX3, and we've been adding great people ever since. And, we're 6 years in. You know, last few years, we've been a little flat revenue-wise, but a lot of it's because we're fine-tuning our solutions and our software and our staff, and everybody's been contributing great. So, we're looking forward to now helping our customers move from, there's still a lot of them, believe it or not, this long, are still embedded in more of a waterfall process. And we're trying to continue to move them to Agile. They want to get there. They have mandates in their companies. And we're working on helping them, you know, take those steps to really achieve that, you know, process improvement, that modernization of their tools and their processes as well.
Great.
Thanks. So you talked a little bit about futuristic, you know, like what's going on, but what really excites you today? Like what trends and things that you're seeing that you want to bring to TX3?
Sure. So what excites me is that there's such a large ecosystem out there, and we have such an awesome relationship and rapport with our customers. And really what excites me, I'll break this up a little bit. One is just getting up every day and working with our team and our customers. Like truly, I think we have a vested interest in that because, you know, they're driving business for us because they're good people and we're trying to make them successful. And they're all humans and we have good conversations, just even being able to connect with people at more of a social and a little bit of a personal level too, for the ones that open up. For TX3, what excites me is we're just hitting, you know, we're really just hitting, you know, the surface or scratching the surface on what we can do. The last year and a half, we were finding our way a bit. So we were kind of by design, quite frankly, because in order to, I think, really fine tune our message and our core focus, we needed to test the boundaries a bit. And I'm a big boundary tester. So some folks, and in fact, one of our investors might have perceived us as testing the boundaries as getting off course. But after we went through the actual process and brought it back, he understood and said, wow, that's awesome. We're really happy to hear you guys ended up where you're at. But we needed to do that. So what I'm excited about, we are hyper-focused on software testing within life sciences. So FDA-regulated software testing, all linked to 21 CFR Part 11, supporting our customers, you know, business systems, lab, manufacturing. You know, so that excites me. I'm excited about the folks we have on board that are getting more involved and more connected. I'm excited to get help finally, because for a while, the way Eric and I were running this company, it was a little too much of a, you know, 1-2 punch, Eric and I, and we're really opening that up now to, you know, we have great talent and what we've learned. And you know, recently I did, conducted a bunch of, you know, virtual coffee breaks with our company and met with just about every single employee, and they're just all very thankful to be here. They have great things to say. They have great talents and they all have their, you know, their unique personalities, and just learning about that. That's what excites me. And I want to offer them the opportunity to, you know, enjoy working, enjoy their work environment, have a high quality of life. So that's really what excites me.
Great. What is the most important thing that folks need to know about you?
That's interesting. So I am a change junkie that is also has high anxiety. it's like a self-fulfilling prophecy because, and it's interesting. I taught my oldest this, like he has high anxiety, like a lot of anxiety. And I said, if you can leverage that, you can achieve whatever you need, right? Whatever your goals are, you can achieve. And for me, it's almost a self-fulfilling prophecy because I have a lot of anxiety and I change a lot, and it's not good. That's not a good combination, but I've found a way that I can monitor it and regulate it. So I, for the most part, it's not a perfect science here, right? It's a system that I am able to continually operate very functionally at a high level without getting kicked out. And where you have those big, you know, days where you wake up and you just feel like someone, you know, kind of hit you over the head with a hammer. So that's what it is. I think I try to be, I get excited. Don't get me wrong. Get me wrong. I am. I'm excitable, and that's how I am. I'm an overreactor. My family, Tevin Hearts, are. We are. we have a life. You know, lifelong overreactors. We are. Mm-hmm. That's our lineage. But at the end of the day, I do try to stay a little calmer because it helps me just be able to handle the ups and downs from an anxiety standpoint. And that's a challenge. But I think, I don't know if how many folks know that a lot of that's under the covers. Because I do talk to a lot of people, even friends, yeah. Which I'm amazed at how many people are on medication. And a lot of people do need that, don't get me wrong. But, and this is a very close, you know, to my heart topic. My son really, really struggles from this, but he's doing awesome. And, but I did figure out what worked for me to handle it.
Yeah. I think you and I are very similar and we know that about each other, given how long we've known each other and worked together. And it's that fine balance between the race of thoughts, right? And right. The desire for change and being able to know yourself well enough and to know when you need to reach out. So you often reach out to me, I reach out to you, and we go through those roller coasters at different times, thank goodness, because if we did them at the same time, it might be a different result.
Yeah.
Cool. So What is one of the most defining moments of your life? What do you think kind of made you into, because you're an entrepreneur as well, right? So it's not just in your IT kind of role and hat, but and leader, you're an entrepreneur. So what is some defining moments that made you want to take this path?
Yeah, so I have one extremely defining moment. I was home Christmas break, was it 1990? Yeah, I think so. My freshman year of college, my dad got laid off from Sierra Bard. They were one of our clients at one point. But and when that happened, like, I just started college. I was very lucky. My parents paid for at least 4 years of my college. It took me a little longer because I'm a slow learner, but I just party a lot, one or the other, a little bit of both. But anyway, so that was it. Like, I was sitting at the table. I'll never forget. It was Christmas Eve. New Year's Eve. It was like the 30th, right? It was 29th of December, sitting at our dining room table. I'll never forget. And he's like, you just got let go. You know, so he busted his ass working for those guys, traveling all around to California every month, and he just let him go, right? It was a numbers thing, and now I understand it. Obviously, I was younger at the time, and I just, at that point, I'm like, I need to have my own business. I need to be able to control my own destiny, and that's where that was my big, I think, change and inflection point by far.
What's one of the best things that's happened this year for you? This has been a strange year. COVID's been a unique circumstance.
It has. Well, and I think this is probably something similar for a lot of families, but being with my family, our kids were just like any kid, you know, growing up in 2020, 1920, just very, very stressed out with school. They have a lot more work, I feel like, than we ever had. You know, they're on their devices probably more than they should. And Jess and I, my wife, have always tried to really emphasize reading time, books, and no screen time. And but it gets out of control sometimes. And you know, we are all in just this like, you know, high speed, rapid paced lifestyle, which kind of sucks, quite frankly. And that's what we slowed it all down. And I've heard, I think, a lot of similar sentiments from different folks. And the other part is my parents are finally moving out to Pennsylvania. So they live in Northern New Jersey still. And 5 years ago, we should have done it 10 years ago, but this actually shifted them. And I think part of it's more, you know, mortality play here, where they realize they don't have much time and they need to be out here with their family.
Great. One of the things about great leaders is learning from your mistakes. And so I was wondering if you could tell us, you know, an example of when you failed spectacularly and you came on the other side.
So I got lots of mistakes. You can plot my life out. It's an ongoing mistake probably. So there's a very current one, and you can take it for what it is here, but I think it's how we've been running the company a bit. And that seems like a pretty large mistake or global mistake to make. But since we have such strong staff and leaders here, it's just the company survives very well. But the way I know I've personally been managing has been a little bit undermining, I think, to folks. They're not, you know, asking folks for help or asking for their feedback. But a lot of times, you know, just going in the own direction, wherever I had set in my head anyway. So was I doing it more just going through the motions because I want people to feel included, or was it something I generally needed feedback on, and there was a good way to incorporate that. So I feel that is something that over the last probably 18 months, I'd say over the last 3 or 4 months, probably even since the summer, we'll say since the summer, we've been making that shift, and I've been really personally trying to be aware of how I'm interacting with some of the folks at the company and of our leaders to, you know, if I'm asking them to make a decision or manage something, that I'll respect that. And not look at them, let them go down the road and come in and say, no, this is what you're doing, you know? So that's very disruptive. And I think it's caused a lot of complex issues. Some people have complexes about, you know, or Jason Eric is going to jump in, and actually I'll talk about me more. Jason's going to jump in here and just change the direction anyway, right? And that's something I learned a bit on some of my one-on-ones. And no one came out and said that, and I didn't expect them to, but if I was reading between the lines of some things, you know, I could tell. At the end of the day, everything was like boiling up to the two co-founders, and I don't want to run a company like that long term. And there's a lot of talent and great input, and quite frankly, smarter people myself out there, and for different reasons, right? So that's what we want to bring that to the surface and expose that and let them help lead. And they're going to need, and the other thing I did learn is they're going to make mistakes too, and that's okay. And not that, and I've been a perennial mistake maker. But for some reason, when you're running a company and you're thinking about cash flow and longevity and growth, you know, you're trying to minimize mistakes that might, you know, impact your bottom line, but we were going about it wrong. Some of those mistakes you're going to learn from and actually scale faster or better because you let that mistake occur, or that mistake helps someone mature and get to the next level to be able to lead better. So that's just something I really realized over the last several months, just trying to take a deep look in the company and myself personally.
That's great. So part of what you're saying also is, given that self-reflection, you have some thoughts about this year. What are some of those changes you're going to make based on those learnings?
Yeah. So this year we've always had a couple senior folks that we almost like consulted with. And when I say we, myself and Eric, the other co-founder, but this year we're now organizing the company. So we have a whole set of goals and objectives and a formal leadership team that takes ownership over those objectives and to achieve the goals. And within there, we're going to meet as a group. So there's a balance there, you know, so it's not Eric and I sitting at a table and then everybody else contributing and doing their own role, but kind of siloed and disconnected. Right. So you know, we run and last year we did actually really well last year. We did have a set of goals and objectives. They were probably rolled out to limited people a lot, and more of them are around profitability and expense control. That's really what we need to like secure and stabilize our business. And we did a great job. And margin, it was more about things that we can fine tune within the current, you know, bowl of what we were dealing with right now, of the current structure. But taking the next leap, we said, all right, now we need to blow this up and open this up. So we're now including and involving the other senior folks who, you know, we want to give them a chance to help us grow the company and be part of the leadership team. And the other thing is we're going to be very numbers driven. So that's going to be a big difference. Everybody's going to have a number from Eric and I down through our leadership team, down through management and the consultants. And we're all going to hold each other accountable. And that's going to tell the story, as opposed to back channel discussions on more subjectiveness over, well, so-and-so didn't hit that number or quota, but, you know, that's okay because of X, Y, and Z. That needs to be taken out of Eric and my hands. And at least this is what I believe, so that we can now hand this off to help, you know, build a company. And we're going to find out some folks maybe aren't in the right roles, right? They're not in the right seats, and that's okay. We'll adjust it.
Cool. What do you think our biggest vulnerability is as a company?
It's people, just like people are their biggest strength. So our vulnerability is personnel and how we set them up for success. And, you know, and it's also our strength that we have an unbelievable staff here. And so vulnerability, yeah, I believe it's people, and part of it, you know, I'd say leadership's ability to make decisions. Not even that some of them are going to be wrong, but can we make the tough decisions? And even if they are wrong, learn and adjust and course correct as we're going.
What do you want for our TX3 employees?
I want them to have a very, very high quality of life. So they're working now virtual and they all have families, and I really want them to enjoy their work, you know, but know that family's first and we respect that, and we can set them up for that success of their life so they can share that time. Because just over the last 20 years that I've been in this industry, something like that, right? So over the last 20 years or so, I know there's been stints where I've been, you know, I used to say I would call myself a secondary caregiver. And I've always spent time with my family, so it's not that bad. But it was a joke because I would spend so much time, my head down, and my wife's awesome, Jess, and she's always got everything covered, trust me. But I look back, and I definitely didn't miss anything. So I did always make time for my family. But I probably could have done a little more. And so if we have the opportunity, especially now we're all working virtual, to set our employees up so they have a really high quality in life and they enjoy what they're doing and they feel they're contributing, then I think it's a win.
Cool. What do you want for our customers?
I want our customers to be successful. And it's interesting because we've had some very strong relationships with our customers. When I say success there, and it's a way we approach and work with our customers, is that I want their quality of life to be high as well, and their experience at their organizations to be positive. And I've seen firsthand, or been part of, involved firsthand of working with a customer very much as a partnership and setting them up for success within their company to help them navigate, to guide them within their company and make them a rock star, make them happy, and also get that relationship where they trust us, you know, not only as a trusted advisor from a business perspective, but just as people, quality folks, as a quality company they want to do work with that has, you know, high integrity and that has their best interests. So I'd say for our customers, you know, I could give you the whole, well, we want to help them evolve their process, improve. Of course, yeah, that's what we're doing. However, for our individual customers we work with, each and every individual one of them, we want to help make them more successful. We want to help elevate them at their companies and help them drive, you know, their initiatives and take care of their employees, their internal customers, and have them enjoy their job. You know, it's too often I've been involved where these big corporate cultures and where they get to a point where people are really sour and the negativity really, really comes out when you discuss them. They're just really demoralized, I'd say, to a degree of constantly battling. So we could help make those battles a little less and a little easier for them and you know, have a few wins that, you know, perk them up a little bit, make them a little happier, then that's a success.
Cool. One of the things you and I talk about frequently is our industry as a whole and how backward they are and still can be. So what do you want for our industry in general, the CSV world, this, you know, SDLC world, where still struggling in some areas to progress?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I have to put some thought there. You know, what I want versus what, how we help induce change.
What's the problem there? What do you think is the fundamental issue?
It's the people. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you have a lot of folks that have been in this industry and you talk about self-reflection, looking, and they've been trained in a way of doing things, and GMPs and FDA regulations, it's become a handcuff, not an innovation tool. Right. And a lot of the folks, and I don't know if it's folks are vying for their job, they feel threatened by automation. There's so many variables here, but in general, people are defensive over their territory. They are against change. Right. So we can just open their mind, say, listen, if these factors are of no consequence here and you would have a job and you would still be, you know, viewed as, you know, a high value contributor, you know, would everybody just stop, open their minds and work forward? It's everybody's got an agenda. So you have the leaders there wanting to lead, want to be on a stadium and present. You know, I personally, this is another thing I don't know if people know, but I don't like presenting as much. Sometimes I do well at it. Sometimes I don't do as well with it. It gets me nervous. My anxiety kicks in. It really does. You know, if I'm in a social situation, I will. But I will present. I feel like I can have a message that can help people. Definitely. But then you have folks that are leading our industry that have been there for years. They're part of the problem. I'll never forget. I was a consent decree project at a very large pharmaceutical company. So think about this. They had consent decrees. It means they said to FDA, we know we screwed up. We got to make a lot of changes before you come and hammer us with all these fines and everything. This is what we're going to do, right? We're going to fix all these processes and new technology, new systems, training, update our quality system, whatever it may be, right? Well, who do you think was running all that? All the people who were part of the problem. So if you look at our industry and all the people trying to lead the change, part of the reason we are where we are is because those are the folks that were part of that problem. And I know for the most part, a lot of them are trying to change, but we really need to embrace, you know, new thoughts, new leadership outside. And I think some of that's definitely happening, but I just see it's crusty. I go to some of these conferences like IVT and Connect. You have the same people looking for the same things, being trained and the same speakers who have been on a circuit for 15, 20 years, you know? So, and that sounds terrible. I'm not saying that from a negative perspective or to undermine them, because these people have a lot of knowledge, but maybe it's somehow a different form, a different way to present. Look at the CSA right now. Is that really new information, or it's a group trying to maybe have a more prescriptive approach? I think there's definitely, I see a lot of positive to that. But you could go back and look at at GAMP guidelines, GAMP 5, and they have a lot of the fundamental structure of what you should do for risk-based, right?
Yep, it's all the same.
And it's all the same, data integrity. Oh, so data integrity wasn't here until 5 or 6 years ago. It's like we're reinventing terms to try to trigger us to do something different to advance our industry. So there's got to be a better way. And I think a lot of it is everybody keeping their egos, putting it aside. You have my dog in the background.
I know.
So a lot of it is taking your egos, putting it aside, and just looking at this from a clean slate approach. We don't need the top, you know, thought leader of all time involved in a room all the time. Or maybe we do need them there to guide and learn and help instill their wisdom, but also be open to shifting and changing the paradigm a bit. Like we talk about paradigm change, but it doesn't really happen. You know, and people also jump on the bandwagon. Oh my God, CSA sounds like the best thing ever. They don't understand what it is. Are they just hearing that? You know, we can give a compelling argument of how we could change the whole industry with our solution. And I guarantee we'll have people at a pep rally ready to roll and rock. They don't really understand, just because we're inspiring by some words we say, but do they really understand how to do it, how to change the process? Heck, most of it's internal politics. Do they know how to get this stuff through? You know, right. Do they understand that the company needs to make money and that's what's driving a lot of this? And there's just so many elements there. So obviously I could talk about this for another.
Yeah. Hour. I think we're actually have a whole separate podcast on the topic, but that is definitely one on which I know you and I are very, very similarly, thinking though. When I think about, TX3 moving forward, I try to come up with key differentiators between us and our other implementation partners and other, and I think in the past it's been hard to, are we a product company? Are we a service company? What are we, right? In terms of, and then how do we, who are our competitors and how do we fit in there? So can you say a little bit about that?
Sure. And this is, we're going to actually have a meeting this week on just this topic to fine tune us. So I'm going to be a little bit ambiguous here, but maybe we have a follow-up and then we'll unveil the actual real true core vision of who we are, core focus vision. So we're a solution provider. And one thing we've grappled with is identity crisis. You're right, for TX3. Now, what is our value here? We have great people that are from the industry, understand the process and the technology. And we have hardcore software developers all the way through people who are more processing, wouldn't know a piece of code if they saw it. We have that range. That's huge. We can go toe-to-toe with cloud people and Amazon Azure. We get to go toe-to-toe with the DevOps team. You know, we can go toe-to-toe with quality and compliance, right? So there, I don't know if many companies have that range. So that's by far our differentiating factor. And we do have people who came out of labs and manufacturing, you know, Dory, yourself and I included, right? Doesn't mean we know everything because it's been a while since we've been in a lab, but we at least have been exposed. We've had our hands on to what these pharmaceutical companies are trying to do. So that's our biggest differentiating factor. As far as who we are, TX3, our focus here, you know, we're solution oriented, and I'll tell you why. You know, we jumped 2 years ago into being, we're a product company. We're going to sell our electronic signature via electronic signature workflow, system or software that integrates into all these DevOps tools, and we want it to be all product. But a lot of our success in selling that technology with the consulting and the guidance we gave up front as advisors, as thought leaders, because we are thought leaders. And for us to be able to interact with our customers and help guide and build that internal roadmap, help them even understand how to align what software tasks, what should you do in software testing? How should you improve it to align with these digital transformation issues? What the heck does that mean, right? Do they even understand it? Who knows? How much of it even kind of trickles down to them other than we got to go to the cloud? They have no idea what that means, right? So there's a lot of stuff I think our folks don't understand. So that consulting piece we do up front, because we do have our own, you know, DevOps platform of tools. We do have a quality management system here. We do have, you know, validation process. We do have a SDLC. We are like a small pilot of everything our customers are trying to do and aspire to do. So we have that piece. So that front end consulting and solutioning sets up the software sale on the other side. And that's something where definitely, you know, I've had some debates about, or I don't know if there have been debates, but I know there's different thoughts on, well, we don't want to go too much services because, you know, we need to focus more on product and the product in order to support that. We're pulling our software developers to deliver. Yeah, we got some issues like that we need to sort out. But it's a complementary setup. So as a solution provider, we do have a software product. And as we scale and as we make that that product more self-sufficient, meaning we don't need these heavy-duty services and everything to implement it, there's going to be cases where that sells a little lighter without the upfront, consulting services, if you will, and advisory services. However, our main customer base is enterprise, pharmaceutical, biotech, and medical base. They are billion-dollar companies with a lot of process, which that's what we do now. And they need that nurturing, that guiding upfront, and that roadmap exercise, the roadmap exercises to help them really formulate what their maturity model is, and also that make sure they're aware of what do you need to align with for software testing to, as your group and your organization to support the digital transformation initiatives, the agile initiatives, the cloud initiatives at a higher level. What do you need to be thinking about from a software testing standpoint? And that all goes hand in hand. And that's a lot of that is a big part of making of what we do and the success to our solution getting implemented at these organizations and used appropriately, and gives it the opportunity to grow within the organization. So it's a little convoluted, answer there, but we'll get it tightened up a little bit.
What's one message that you would want to give? So in most cases, or hopefully in many of our cases, we do have pretty senior level connections at our customers, and the higher we go, the more effective we can be, right? In affecting change in an organization. What are some of the things that you might want to share with those senior leaders, senior executives, CIO level folk? What are some of the things that you would want them to consider? Or
yeah, so a lot of the work, and we do have senior level connections at our companies, but a lot of the work we do is really what we'll say what's really middle management, regardless if their title is director or VP. So at the senior level, it's, do they understand what's going on downstream and how some of the initiatives for some of these teams that are supporting the SDLC are impacting upstream business objectives? Is it aligned? Are they including these folks from a leadership perspective, or is it just trickle down the lane that, oh, so-and-so reports three layers down from the CIO who has his master plan? It's kind of like TX3 to a degree. We have a master plan. It's all in between Eric and Jason, and kind of Dory knows about it, but she doesn't know everything about it. Does that information really get shared down that chain so these folks understand how to align and what's expected to them? And then the other thing is within these, what we're seeing a lot more now at these organizations, that there's pockets of someone saying, all right, just go do it agile and get DevOps in there. Don't worry about what the testing tools team is doing or the team that owns the tools or the SLC process, because they're too waterfall based. We're going to do it our own way. So is there a way that they can help promote continuity and connectivity between these groups so they can work together to achieve those? And how important at their level is it? Do they really just care about the ERP systems and cloud and agile from such a high level that these folks on the ground aren't getting the support they need to be successful? Because if you look at it too, and this sounds a little bit terse, but it's kind of the reality, is a lot of the folks at the level they're in, they were great consultants or great engineers at some point. Did they ever get the right training to become a director? Did they get the right mentoring to become a director level or understand how to business plan and align? And not that we know how to do that great either. Trust me, we're still learning. But that's a gap I see. And I think these higher level senior managers or senior executives, maybe they know this already. There are programs at these companies that they, at least some of them go through emotions, but how much are they checking and evaluating how successful these folks are? Do they have the right people on the ground? Or is it just a numbers game that they're just trying to cut off and outsource everything? So I think they just need to give attention downstream and understand how to communicate that business vision and objective from their organization, what they're trying to do, and make sure everybody's aligned. And then the folks within these teams that we work with, making sure they have the proper support and are connected enough to the ultimate business process or business planning process, I should say.
Perfect. All right. So if you could meet one person, living or dead, who would it be?
I thought about this question because this is hard for me because I was like, who would I really want to meet? So it's a group of people. I would like to meet the founding fathers of the United States of America. Because I would like them to wake up and see what the hell is going on. Right?
Is this really what you meant?
Excuse me?
Is this really what they meant, right?
Exactly. And if you think about the intricacy and the time that how they crafted the Constitution, it's freaking amazing. In fact, it lasted this long. And I happen to be reading a book right now, United States Presidents, which is actually bought for my son Luke, but he didn't read it. So I just read a few pages. And it's unbelievable what they did to create the United States of America. And I know there's a lot of controversy now going back into a lot of stuff that's going on and how we got here. But we got here somehow, right? So let's just look at where we're at right now. But have them just all of a sudden get transported back, from back in time here, raise them from the dead, actually. I'd like to bring them here and say, check this out.
All right. So aisle or window seat of an airplane?
Aisle.
Claustrophobic. You got to get out of there fast.
I want to be restricted.
All right. Would you rather have no phone access for a year or no car access? The big car.
No
car.
Phone. But I need to go places. I need to get out of here.
Well, you love cars too, right? I mean, I don't. I
but can't. No phone. That was easy. I don't need a phone.
All right, Jason. Well, thank you. Thank you for your time. And yes, we'll be doing this. A couple of different ways throughout the year. I think it will help all of us get to know who TX3 is, get to know you on a more personal level, and get the word out there to our potential new customers.
Absolutely. This was great. Well done. I appreciate it. Appreciate the time.
Thanks for listening to Software Quality Today with Dora Gonzalez-Azevedo. If you like what you just heard, we hope you'll pass along our web address, txthreeservices.com, to your friends and colleagues. And please feel free to leave us a positive review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you subscribe. Also, be sure to check out our archive section on our website for previous episodes. You can also check us out on LinkedIn, Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter at TX3 Services. This has been a TX3 Services production. Join us next time for another edition of Software Quality Today.